Hello, my name's Adam Spring, and this is a Remotely Interested podcast. In fact, it's the first Remotely Interested podcast. I'm joined by my producer, Trevor Biondich. Trevor, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Adam, especially for our first.
Me too, and I'm quite excited to be here and doing it.
All right, now I have a quick question.
Fire away.
All right, why did you decide to start this podcast?
I decided to do this podcast because I want to look at the potential cross-pollination between technology-driven markets. I've been working in the high-end technology field for an extended period of time now, and the one thing I've noticed is people don't necessarily talk to each other in the way that you would expect them to, or communicate their stories to one another in how they're using technologies. So I've decided to do this to get people talking.
So who do we have for our first guest?
So our first guest is from Pixar Studios. He's worked on Ghostbusters 2, he's worked on RoboCop 2, he also worked on The Nightmare Before Christmas. And for about 15 years, he's been working with Pixar as a clay model maker of all of the characters that they feature in those films before they get digitized and put into computer software like RenderMan.
Oh, wow. Now, weren't you also saying that maybe our viewers don't know, but from our little talk beforehand, that he also has another job?
Yes, he does. He has a startup company called PaleoMill with another member of Pixar Studios, and they 3D laser scan and 3D print dinosaur bones.
Well, that sounds interesting. I look forward to hearing what Greg has to say. Now, since this is our first podcast, maybe we should let the listeners know that we have a certain format that we are packaging our podcast in for them to actually consume.
Yeah, that's a good point. So the way it's going to work is we're going to have an open-ended interview. We're going to let it run, and we're going to split it into two parts. And then at the end of part two, I'm going to ask Greg to have the listeners go away with five things that he thinks would be useful for them to learn about. That could be a website, it could be a book, it could be any source of information whatsoever. So without further ado, I present Greg Dykstra. Okay, my name is Adam Spring, and I'm here today with Greg Dykstra from Pixar Animation Studios. Hi, Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm great. Thank you very much. So before we start, tell us a little bit about you and what you do at Pixar.
I am a character sculptor and designer. So I actually work in clay to help us figure out the designs of the characters. Sometimes this is happening. It starts with sketches. Usually there's drawings of some kind. And then it'll go to sculpture. It'll go come to me, and I'll either be interpreting very rough ideas and helping develop the character, or I'll be working out the designs with more detail, with drawings that have more detail, and just kind of proving the design, making sure the director can see it, rotate it, touch it, do all kinds of things in a physical medium in real light. And then once we're happy with those designs, then that sculpt can be scanned and put in the computer, and either the data can be worked on directly, or it can be used as reference and modified as needed as we go through the process of figuring out how the thing will move, and we may need to make changes along the way.
Okay, that's fantastic. You kind of touched upon something I was going to actually talk to you about a little bit later on. But with regards from taking the physical object into the computer and, I guess, creating it either a digital mold or basically taking the parts of it that you want into the computer, what sort of scanning devices are you using? Are you using optical triangulation, or are you using things like Next Engine? What sort of things are you using to do that?
We've used a few different things over the years, but what we're doing mostly right now is structured light scanner that we have at Pixar, and so what we get is just a simple point cloud, and then that can be the software that we use can recognize that is a shape, and it can basically the modeler that's doing stuff has to, of course, come up with this version of it that is simplified, that it has far fewer points than the original scan. Those points also have to be organized with spans in between, and each one of those has to eventually have a control, or many of them have to have a control put on the AVARs, those points, and create a character that can be moved and that everything distorts correctly because that new mesh that they build.
Okay, that's fantastic. That's really interesting. With regards to the actual physical sculpture itself, obviously I'm assuming it's got wireframe and things like that. What were your influences sort of growing up to want to become a sculptor and things like that? Were you really into things like Ray Harryhausen and stuff like that? Or how did you get to where you kind of are now?
Yeah, definitely. Ray Harryhausen was a big part of it. I was always making drawings from my earliest childhood, and I was always a nature lover. There was always a number of memorable inspirations, though, that kind of collectively attracted me down my career path. The first thing I can remember, like being a real change in my approach to or the way I felt about the world, was when I saw the original Planet of the Apes, which is in 1968. It was at a drive-in when I was five, and it just blew me away. I remember knowing that those were regular people in ape makeup, and that somehow regular people had to have created the stuff I was seeing. And I knew it was their job, but I don't know if it really occurred to me that they were getting paid for it. I just know I wanted to make that kind of stuff myself. And as soon as I got home, I started, experimenting. I started trying to make my lips tight and rigid and kind of try to talk with the restrictions the actors had talked with. But then I discovered Silly Putty would actually stick to your skin for a while. So I made my own temporary ape makeup appliances. And I ran around the house imitating Cornelius. My brother Adam was soon joining in, and we were both acting like apes. But anyway, it seemed like that movie was a gateway for me to other movie apes like King Kong and Mighty Joe Young, which in turn ignited my love of monster movies of all kinds, of stop motion, Ray Harryhausen, monster movie monster makeup. And then there were dinosaurs. Also in 1968, it was a big year for me. I found my first fossil, a little trilobite. My dad and brothers and I were on a canoe trip, and when I found it, I was so puzzled. It looked like a pill bug, like a roly-poly, but it was made of stone. And my dad told me it was once alive, millions of years ago, how he said how everything we were seeing then was completely different. It was an alien world with strange creatures and wondrous plants. And my imagination just exploded that moment. I mean, honestly, it was like a physical sensation. And I could never go back after that. I could never be my old self. It lit a love of the prehistoric world that would be with me for the rest of my life. This excitement that has never died.
It's really interesting because, like, I can hear the enthusiasm through your sort of voice of, like, yeah, you suddenly became aware of, like, it was a reality changing experience almost. And the thing I found interesting when I was actually sort of doing a little bit of research, I mean, obviously we've met before at Pixar and things like that, but when I was doing research for this, I didn't realize that you actually get sent out to, like, for instance, when you were doing things like Ratatouille, you'd actually get sent to Paris and sort of, like, go to the restaurants and see, you know, how the reality of the actual worlds you're creating actually work. And I think that's really sort of fascinating that you get to sort of do that, because it must be, it's kind of translating the everyday into this completely made up world, but that must be one of the most difficult things you can actually do.
Yeah, it is. A lot of times, our task is to, I mean, in caricaturing the world, we're looking for the things that, the information that is really important, in someone's face or in, or even in, like, trying to distill what makes people, for me, it's mostly people in Paris look like, a French population. And there actually are, very subtle differences from country to country that you can see. If you're in Australia or if you're in France, the group of people you see as a whole might have some certain common traits you're not going to see quite the same in other countries. And so it's that kind of observation of the important details that make that work that we have to figure out what to exaggerate about any of the characters we're doing, whether they're human or not, and then what details have to kind of be suppressed, kind of simplified and made less important, so that ultimately what we get is kind of a highlighted version of those things. And that works even with